Hey everybody, welcome into the Cubs Weekly Podcast presented by Wintrust. Head to wintrust.com/cubsweekly for more information. For Andy Martinez, I'm Tony Andracki, and Andy, let's get right down to it. The injury bug has struck again, well, again and again and again, really, for the Cubs since the last time we've done the podcast. Kyle Hendricks, Drew Smyly on the IL on Tuesday. They'll be out at least 2 full weeks, you know, 15 days, maybe even more than that for each guy. Cody Bellinger, fractured ribs, a pair of fractured ribs here. So let's start with Bellinger, a little bit bigger deal, obviously, but what do you kind of anticipate? What do you make of this, and where do the Cubs go from here with all this?
Yeah, Cody Bellinger's injury was obviously the biggest news of the week, and that's saying something when there's three roster moves the day prior. But it's really interesting to see what's going to happen with the center field picture, because the natural inclination or the natural thought is to think PCA, who was called up, Pete Crow Armstrong, who was called up for Bellinger, is the everyday center fielder, and that's not going to be the case. And Craig Counsell was pretty open about that, saying that Pete's here to help them win, and it's beyond just his bat, right? Like, he can do other things that'll help the Cubs win, and we saw it Wednesday night in his first game action this season in the major leagues, where he comes in as a defensive replacement. That's kind of how Pete Crow Armstrong is going to be used in this time up, and we don't know how long Bellinger's going to be out. He's on the 10-day IL right now. I expect it'll be longer than that.
Oh, definitely.
I think it would have been on the 60-day right away, but maybe it took Julian Merriweather a little bit to land on the 60-day, so I don't know how long. We don't know how long he'll be out, but in the meantime, it seems like Mike Tauchman is the center fielder, and he's been playing well enough that he warrants the time in center field. With Pete Crow Armstrong, he's going to get some playing time. It's going to be interesting to see how he develops, because one of the biggest question marks that he had was his offensive game and his offensive profile. He struggled in his first go-around in the major leagues last year in September. He's been working on some things in the offseason, in spring training. He's been struggling a little bit in the minor – he's been struggling pretty well in the minor leagues. Craig Counsell was pretty open about that. Now it's about seeing, like, can he get some regular playing time? What can he do with it, the playing time that he does get, and how can he contribute to some of the wins for the Cubs this season?
Yeah, and I mean, I think going back to the timeline for Bellinger, like, best case scenario at this point is late May, or, you know, maybe right, mid to late May range, and it's very possible it could be beyond that. I mean, you have to let fractures heal, and that entire time he can't be doing baseball activities, and then he's going to have to build back up and get to the point where, and, you know, unfortunate because he had just started hitting his stride. Like, he even said that himself. He felt like he got off to a slow start to the season, you know, and really offensively, and felt like he was hitting his stride the last week right before going down. And he even woke up Wednesday hopeful that he felt like he told Counsell that he felt like he had missed something here, that he had sidestepped something in a good way. And a CT scan, you know, showed the fractured ribs. So now it's about, you know, figuring out what's next. And like you said, you know, it was a great breakdown of what the outfield picture looks like, but it's like, if Tauchman's in center, then that means right field is Canario or maybe Patrick Wisdom, or maybe there are times where PCA starts in center and Tauchman moves to right. And oh, by the way, Ian Happ just missed the weekend series with a hamstring injury, the same hamstring that limited him for several weeks in spring training. And then, you know, when it comes down to PCA actually replaced Happ in the outfield on Wednesday, Tauchman moved to right, Canario moved from right to left, PCA in center. So there's a lot of moving parts here. So essentially the Cubs' top three outfielders are, two of them are on the IL and the others banged up and not at 100%. And the Cubs don't have another off day for 2 full weeks now. So they're playing 16 games in a row. It's a big kind of mess right now. That being said, they're 15-9 and they're winning right now. So they're rising above it. It's going to be difficult to do that moving forward.
Yeah, it definitely is. But it is incredible to think about where they're kind of at. You mentioned their record. You mentioned where they're at. You mentioned how they've been playing. Like, they are without Justin Steele. They were out with Jameson Taillon for a while. Kyle Hendricks was their number two starter when Taillon went down with an injury. He's really struggled. Drew Smyly was going to be a big piece in the bullpen. He's out. We've seen some of the ineffectiveness of Adbert Alzolay.
Julian
Merriweather's out. Like, all these things have compounded, and it seems like nothing has kind of fazed them so far this season. And that's a Craig Counsell effect. Maybe that's the camaraderie of the team, who went from 10 games under last season to 10 games over at one point last season. Like, maybe it's a combination of all that. But it's really incredible to see what they're doing. And really, if you think about the schedule that they went through before this last four or five games, it's kind of incredible what they did. The Texas Rangers, the San Diego Padres, the Arizona Diamondbacks, the Los Angeles Dodgers, all these playoff contending teams, Seattle Mariners, and they went through the gauntlet. They're kind of going through a, I guess, softer part of their schedule, and they're seemingly coming out on top. And the hope for the Cubs is that, you know, in maybe like a week or two, you get Justin Steele back. Then maybe Seiya Suzuki comes after that, and then maybe Cody Bellinger after that. And now you're starting to get healthy, and it's valuable experience for these young guys. We talked about Alexander Canario, right? He's been a long-time top prospect. Now he's getting a little bit longer of a runway. What does he do with it? Does he take advantage? Does he perform well? Does that crowd the outfield picture? Like, those are all good problems to have. Ideally, you would want to have that with Cody Bellinger and Seiya Suzuki and Justin Steele, but the fact of the matter is they're going to have to go with these young guys, and it's going to be crucial for them to kind of step up a little bit to fill that void.
Yeah, and I think, going back to the offseason, like, not that there was much of a surprise, but the decision to maintain Talkman, despite the fact that they have all these young outfielders, I think was obviously a very good decision for the Cubs. I mean, he's going to be, after the summer of Talkman, it's going to be a big thing again this year, and he's going to have to continue to play well if the Cubs are going to tread water and keep their head above water during this stretch. So I'm curious to see how this plays out. I do think Council has the perfect temperament for this. He keeps just talking about turning the page and moving forward, and this is what a baseball season entails. I'm sure that he wouldn't have wanted this in his first 3.5 weeks of being the manager to deal with all of these things, to all the speed bumps and the hurdles and rising above adversity. Good for the Cubs to stack wins now. Like you said, they're in a softer part of the schedule, which is nice. The Red Sox and Mets are series that are coming up, and they do play the Brewers after that, so that they're playing really good ball, of course, Council's old team. That'll be an interesting series, but, they're catching the Astros at the right time. Even when they were struggling with stuff, they were able to split a series with the Marlins and that kind of thing. So I do think they've stacked up wins for sure. I think it's going to tell us a lot about some of these young guys, about Canario, what his potential future is, about Matt Mervis, too. I mean, here's a guy who we haven't even talked about yet, but Garrett Cooper's DFA'd. Mervis is up because the Cubs are going to face a bunch of right-handed pitchers over the next couple of weeks. They want to see what Mervis can do at DH. So I do think it's a really, really interesting time. I mean, Morel's playing good defense, hasn't been hitting much. Michael Busch hasn't been hitting coming back from the road trip, too. So, like, if these guys turn it around, then they can absorb the loss of a Bellinger and Suzuki a little bit better. But it's the natural ebbs and flows of the season. I do think that where the pitching is at a good point. The offense is going to be a question mark until at least Suzuki comes back and then Bellinger after that.
Which is not something we would have said 2 weeks ago, right?
No.
2 weeks ago.
Not even 3 days ago. Yeah.
Right. Two weeks ago, like, all the questions were, what's the pitching look like? Who's the closer? Like, all these things are stacking up, and then all of a sudden, like, the offense is going well. And Craig Counsell even alluded when things were going well. He's like, we're not going to be doing this all season. Like, he knew there was going to be lulls coming. Obviously, he probably didn't predict all these injuries would be coming with it, but that it all happened. And I thought one of his best quotes so far as Cubs manager was over the weekend when Elise Menneker asked him, one of your traits is being able to be calm and prepared like 10 steps ahead. Yeah. How do you do that? And he just says paranoia, like just flat out paranoia. Everyone starts laughing. But then he went into it, and it's like, in that job, your job is to prepare for every single worst case scenario. It's to imagine like everything's going to go wrong, because when it happens, you're ready for it. And
Carter used the phrase, Carter Hawkins on our broadcast, he was with Boog and JD, he used the phrase seeing around corners really well, it's a great phrase for it. So he said Council sees around corners really well.
Yeah, and that's the point right now, is like, he is not panicked when these guys are hurt. He was asked, how do you deal with all these injuries? How do you manage it? He's like, we got to play today. We got to try and win a ball game today. You can't try and think of like, well, in a week and a half, maybe we'll get this guy back, or in 2 weeks, we'll get this guy, or in a month, we'll have our whole team. Like, you can't think about that. Your job is to try and focus on winning that day's game and doing it with what you have available. And some days it's going to be a full complement of your roster that you made in February and January, and some days it's not. And that's kind of just the role that they're in.
Yeah, and I will say, I think with Tyone being back and pitching well the first couple times out, he's taken on a leadership role. It seems like Justin Steele is very close to returning as well, maybe within the next 10 days or so, not necessarily like imminent this weekend or anything like that, but that'll be a big boost for a team that certainly needs boost wherever they can get it. So, that'll sum up the first half here with Andy, but we did talk to Dexter Fowler as well and just chatted about what it's like to rise above adversity, to deal with injuries and that kind of stuff, and a little bit of 2016 memories as well. So stay tuned after the break for that.
You've got the jersey, the ball cap, the foam finger. Everyone can see you're a Chicago Cubs fan from a mile away. Ready to take your look to the next level? Upgrade your wallet with an exclusive Cubs debit card, which you can get when you open a Wintrust Cubs checking account. With no monthly fees, free ATMs nationwide, and a $300 bonus when you open your account. Start showing your Cubs pride with every purchase. Sign up at Wintrust.com/Cubs. Only $100 required to open. No monthly minimum balance and no monthly maintenance fees. Member FDIC and Equal Housing Lender.
Hey everybody, welcome back into the Cubs Weekly Podcast. Tony Andracki, and we have a special guest, Dexter Fowler. Dex, thanks for joining us here.
No, thanks for having me. Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously the big news surrounding the Cubs right now is the injury to Cody Bellinger, right? Running into the wall at Wrigley Field. I guess, first off, you played center field a bunch at Wrigley. Can you tell fans, tell people just what it's like seeing the ivy, thinking it might be a little bit softer, but then there's this brick wall that's been
You know what? When I was in high A, I broke my hand. Had to get stitches. I had to get surgery, screws, the whole nine. And I remember going when I was rehabbing with the Rockies, and Matt Holliday told me, he said, "Hey man, that wall always wins." He said, "That wall always wins. You'll never win against the wall. And your pitcher is going to want you out there for 6 weeks instead of missing because you're trying to make one catch. So play the ball off the wall and keep it pushing." But that wall, especially here at Wrigley, brick wall, you're not going to win that battle.
Yeah, and I mean, it's difficult too, because the play that Belly went back on, it wasn't a play that he was traditionally would be running into a wall over, right? It was right. A ball that kind of carried that way, and his momentum kind of carried him into the wall. It looked very innocent. I mean, obviously he stayed in for another couple innings. After the game, he thought he wouldn't be out for a while. Now it turns out it's a fracture.
Yeah.
Have you ever fractured a rib or been around teammates who have, and just how long, you know, it takes to get past that kind of stuff?
I haven't fractured a rib. I know it takes a while, you know. They'll probably do a bunch of, you know, bone stem stuff. It's probably a small crack, if it is. So I'm not diagnosing anything.
No, right,
but,
right.
But that's always a tough injury. Is it like an intercostal or a oblique as well? It's more comfort.
What with all the injuries the Cubs have had already this season, because Belly adds to a list of Seiya Suzuki, yeah. And Jameson Taillon just got back. Patrick Wisdom just got back. Justin Steele won't pitch at all in April now. Kyle Hendricks, Drew Smiley. Like, what do you make of all these injuries so far, and how the Cubs navigate this?
Man, it's you got to lean on your minor leagues. You got to lean on those guys coming up, and like PCL's coming up. He has to step in a tough role. I mean, it's hard trying to, you know, make up for Cody Bellinger, but I mean, if he does his thing, that's definitely going to help out. Hopefully Seiya, like, you kind of try to navigate, you know, like you're weaving them together, like, hey, let's get this guy and then this guy and then this guy and and be at full force at some point.
What do you make of just the fact that, you know, as we're, you and I are sitting down recording before Wednesday's game, so they're 14-9, the way the Cubs have navigated this and how Council has steered this, I mean, I know he wishes things were a bit easier his first month of the season, but how do you see the Cubs having risen above this adversity to date, and where they need to go to continue to rise above the adversity?
Man, hats off to Craig, and you know, coming in, like you said, all this adversity he's going through, he's handled it well. The team's still winning. Hopefully they can stay on that path. I mean, those are big players. Those are big players. And then when you get them back, I mean, the sky would be the limit, right? And you get those guys back at full force and the whole team, and, you know, you don't know what these guys can do.
Take us inside the clubhouse when an injury like Belly happens, but that and Seiya and all these other things, or Justin Steele getting hurt on opening day, is there an unspoken thing of like, we all need to step up now and we know that, or is it more spoken? Is this something that you guys are, you know, inside a clubhouse are like, hey, let's step up, let's, you know, figure this out. There's still a bunch of really good players here. Like, how do you navigate?
I think it's unspoken. They know what type of guy that guy is in the clubhouse. They know what type of guy he has on the field, all these guys. And, you know, to lose one of your horses, everybody knows they have to step up. Hopefully not try to do too much, just go out and play their game. But they got to lean, like I said, lean on the guys that are coming up.
Is it kind of interesting for you, you know, being back in town, Cubs-Astros playing, and obviously the Astros were the team you were on, traded to the Cubs before 2015.
Yeah.
Is there a little bit of maybe symbolism or something there?
Kind of. I mean, it's but we were in Houston. We were terrible. So it was a tale of two tapes, right? I went from Houston here, and obviously we went to the National League Championship game, so and then won a World Series. So, and the year before that, we almost lost 100 games. So it was kind of, you know, like I said, it was a blessing in disguise.
What was it like? What is it like being traded, and then, you know, coming here and the way the fans embraced you? I feel like from the start, right?
Yeah, and I've got traded what, 3 times, and they've all been around the same time. So never during the season, which was great because then you can kind of get your bearings going and get your family acclimated to whether it's a new spring training or so on and so forth. But I used it as a chance to get to know different types of guys in the clubhouse and teammates and actually some of my best friends, you know, are on teams that I've gotten traded to. So it's just cool.
When I say the name Kyle Hendricks, what's the first thought that pops in your head?
The professor?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's a tactician out there. The dude is usually spots up his pitches. Obviously, he's been struggling right now. And I think that's more confidence. It's just confidence in throwing his pitches and being able – that's what I said on the air the other day. I said, like, Hendricks is the guy, like, 3-1, 3-2. Like, you don't know what he's going to throw. He can throw anything at any count. He's going to spot it up, and he's going to throw with conviction, right? He's not overpowering, but he's the type of dude that will mess you up for, like, 3 days. Because the other dudes are coming in throwing 100 all over the place, and he's, like – you're mad after your offer. You're like, dang, I should have killed this dude. But he gets outs, and, you know, I've seen it from center field, and it's fun to watch.
Is it also because, like, as an opposing hitter, you go in and you're like, okay, this guy isn't throwing 100. Maybe it's a break. Like, maybe it's a little bit easier day, and then you're swinging through air and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, guys get too big, and, like, you actually have to be more on point for guys that don't throw as hard. Because it's no longer a reaction. It's like, okay, like, it's more calculated. Your body has to be in the right position to hit. So it's tough. I mean, it's tough facing those dudes. And I remember they used to say either you throw above the speed limit or under the speed limit. Yeah. Don't throw at the speed limit because that's when it gets hit.
No, that's good advice for sure. But you talked just a little bit about the struggles that Hendricks has had so far this year. For you being a former teammate of his and stuff, what has it been like watching that? And you mentioned confidence a bit. Do you feel like it is kind of like all confidence with him?
Yeah, right now? And he's on the DL as well, or IL.
Yeah.
And I think it gives him a chance to get a breather, right? And, you know, sometimes that's what you need. But that's why you play 162 games. We all don't play well, you know, all 162. And if you do, you're MVP. But these guys will – you'll struggle. You'll have your times, and everybody has them. And, you know, hopefully he comes out on top.
What was it like kind of watching his – rise, right? Like in 14 he was just getting started, and 15, you know, he wasn't a household name really. Even at the start of 16 he wasn't a household name. Then he gets to the point where he wins the ERA title, he's starting game 7 in the World Series. Like, what was it like from your perspective watching him get to the point where, like you said, the professor, and he became this well-known household name throughout baseball?
Well, the stuff's there. You know, at first you're amazed, like, how is this guy throwing 87, 88 and getting outs like this against, you know, quality big league hitters? And he did it year in, year out, and that's why we called him a professor, because he knew what to throw. He trusted his stuff. He knew what to throw, and he'd throw it at any count.
Also, since you left, the Cubs have been trying to fill this leadoff void, right? Like, they've tried, you know, Kyle Schwarber and Ian Happ several times, and Nico Horner's in there right now, and they've tried so many different things. For you personally, what was it that you kind of took to this leadoff spot and found a bunch of success in that role?
I embraced the role because I had been doing it my whole career. So I used to tell, I remember when I was with Colorado, our owner came to me and he goes, look, just think about it. If you get on base 2 times a game, if it's a hit, a walk, hit by pitch.
Catcher's interference, whatever.
Yeah. You probably get 5 at-bats a game. You're on twice a game. That's 400, mm-hmm. right? That's a 400 on base percentage, right?
Yeah.
And say you walk 2 walks and a hit, or a walk and a hit. I mean, you're hitting at least 250.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, quality at bat, maybe 1 for 3. 275. And that's the way I always thought of things. Like, and then you're scoring runs, right? Because you're on base for the guys, and these guys are RBI situations. You're putting pressure on guys. And that's how I thought about being a leadoff hitter. Just get on base twice, any way you can. And everything else took care of itself.
Why do you think it's difficult for some players to get, you know, whether they have the experience or not, but to step into that spot?
Because I think this day and age, it's like when I was struggling, I was leading off. Right, I wasn't all over the lineup like I was again, and when that happened, obviously I was we're creatures of habit.
Yeah.
So I truly believe if you put guys in their position at all times. I remember in 15, I was punched out like 19 times looking on balls, and I was frustrated. And Joe calls me in his office. He's like, "Dex, man, like, just go out and play. Like, I get there, your calls aren't going your way. I'm not moving you in the lineup. You're a leadoff guy. Just do you. Be you.
Go you play. Go, we go.
Right. Go yeah. play. Like, it's not like I feel like you're putting too much pressure on yourself to do what you need to do, but just go have fun. I'm not moving you. So I'm not sitting you down. You're playing every day. And that right there gives you a lot of confidence. Like these guys, like I believe like if you have a guy leading off, you can't hit third, fourth, fifth, like moving them all over the place, it's kind of changing your mindset. And you know, I believe like if you think the guy's a leadoff hitter, lead him off every day.
Is there a guy on the 2024 Cubs that if you were manager, you'd be like, this guy would be my leadoff hitter, my you go, we go guy?
Yeah, I'll put Nico up there.
I would agree with that. Yeah,
yeah. I would leave that. Just leave him alone. Just put him up there, leave him alone, whether he's struggling, whether he's not struggling, and let him go.
It seems, yeah, like I agree with that about Nico, because I forget who said it. One of his teammates said it the other day. Maybe it was Tyone, but that he seems to be a guy that when he's going well and stuff, the other guys feed off him, and,
yeah.
And it's much more like unspoken. It's this intangible thing, but also, I mean, he's their best base runner. He's their fastest base runner.
Right. He put pressure on guys, on the defense. And like that right there is a typical leadoff hitter. Like, you're stealing bases. We're getting on. If you have thump, that's a plus. Like, but you're taking good at-bats. Like, I believe he takes good at-bats. And second, I would probably – Happer would be my second choice. But
yeah, so the guys that are doing it right now. And
yeah,
stuff,
but I mean, leave them. Yeah. Pick one and leave them, right?
Against righties or lefties, it doesn't matter.
Like, just go. Like, you know every day when you're coming in that you are leading off.
We were talking earlier about rising above adversity and how this team has done it. And talking with Dansby Swanson recently about it, he was saying, I forgot the term he used, but essentially just if teams hang out together, like hanging out together, then they're going to perform well on the field. I remember you talking about the 15 and 16 teams and how you guys were so close and the chemistry that was built paid off on the field. I'm curious how does the chemistry of guys wanting to be around each other and hang out, how does that lead to wins and success on the field?
You know, in the clubhouse, there's a bunch of different personalities and you know, it's about having guys that are willing to be around each other and hang out with each other. Inclusion, like everybody included in everything, right? I believe that's a big, because you don't know what you don't know. Like, I might have a new teammate come in, and if I don't ever go out to dinner with them, I don't ever hang out with them.
Hard to bond.
It's hard to bond, but it's hard to, you know the guy out on the field, know what motivates him out on the field. Like, if I know what motivates him off the field, I can tap into his mind on the field. Right, that's a lot to do with it. And if guys hang out with each other, and you know, either whether it's playing video games, going to dinners, whatever, and everybody's always together, when you get on the field, it's like nobody can touch us. Cause you know, off the field, I know I'm gonna hang out with my boys, and I'm with my boys on the field, which is cool.
So how did that 16 team vibe then? How were you guys able to kind of get on that same page off the field?
There was a lot of us. I mean, but, like, it's the willingness to do it. Like, I mean, you know, you see in some clubhouses, the Latinos do what the Latinos want to do. And, you know, the pitchers stay with the pitchers. And a lot of us didn't like that. Like, so we all were always meshed together. Like, if there was a dinner, team dinner, everybody's invited, right? And we encouraged everybody to go. Whether that's for 15, 20 minutes, whether we were hanging out in the room, hey, everybody come, right? And VJ and them did a good job over there getting us like a big suite or something to hang out in and kind of get away from the game and just being able to sit in a room and talk.
Who is the driving force, like you said, about between setting up the dinners or saying to the rest of the guys, like even the new guys that would come up, rookies, whatever, be like, hey, we're all going to get together, try to show up for 15
minutes. I don't think there was one. It was probably myself or Rossi or Tony or Jay. Hey, it was a bunch of us. There was a bunch of us, Stropey, even Rondon. Like everybody all together was we never excluded anybody.
When we look at like Dansby Swanson too, how have you seen him grow as a leader so far? And it seems like he's just getting more and more comfortable here in Chicago.
Right. I think it's something about the Georgia boys, if I'm just throwing that out there. No, Dansby's been I remember in high school, like he was a leader in high school. It's even stepping in and being a Brave, it's tough to play at home. And you know, he embraced that role, and he was one of the guys over there as well that you could tell that Albies and all them would look up to, right? And, you know, they won a World Series, and, you know, then he comes over here, and, you know, this is his team, right? So, and he's done a great job, I think, motivating these guys and kind of showing, like, how he's worked. Because it was different when he came over. The Braves were totally different organization than the Cubs, right? And he's kind of brought some of his work ethic over here. Not that we didn't work, we just worked differently. And he's also kind of toned it down from what the Braves had.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to see, like, you were talking about just pitchers stay with pitchers. I think one of the things that Dansby succeeded at is he called Adbert Alzolay after blowing a save on Saturday, and he's making sure that it's the whole team. It's not infielders together, pitchers together, or whatever
right.
else.
Right.
And I think that's paid dividends and stuff so far for sure for this team. But Dex, thanks so much for stopping by. We really
Absolutely.
Appreciate the time. That'll do it for this edition of the Cubs Weekly Podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the Marquee Sports Network app or check us out wherever you get your podcasts. For Dex, I'm Tony. Thanks for tuning in.